San Diego Center for Spiritual Living, Mother's Day, Sunday, May 8th, 2020. Today's lesson is The Fear Factor with Reverend Dr. Constance Cook Core. Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Mother's Day. Thank you, thank you. We honor all mothers, and grandmothers, and great-grandmothers, and mothers-to-be. We honor all mothers because today is Mother's Day. And we do this because we know that all mothers are part of the same thing that we are. The same energy, the same life force, the same source. So let us anchor ourselves in the truth as we do each week. There is one power, one presence, one infinite intelligence which flows through all creation. And I call this God, the living spirit almighty, one indestructible, absolute, and self-existent cause in which we live and move and have our being. And we trust this. We trust that we know that this is true. Gary Zukav said in his book, The Seed of the Soul, emotions reflect intentions. Therefore, awareness of emotions leads to awareness of intentions. Awareness of emotions leads to awareness of intention. And our theme for this month of May is emotions. Now, today's lesson is called The Fear Factor. And as I was looking at it, I kept thinking, gee, you know, all these things I'm looking up seem so familiar. So I went back and I realized that on February 27th, our lesson was Ultimate Fear Buster. So that's not too recent. And I shared at that time with you a bit of what fear is, but we also learned about using knowledge and action to break through our fears. So today we're going to be looking at fear through the lens of emotions. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to recap on what fear is. Okay, so F-E-A-R, false evidence appearing real. Things that we see that we interpret as something else. And a good example of that is the icon on your program insert today. You see a hand casting a shadow. And the hand is a nice, simple, unoffensive hand. And the shadow is this huge monster with sharp teeth and wicked antenna, just a big mess. False evidence. What is cast in the shadow is not the truth of what is truly there, which is the hand. F-E-A-R has another definition, well, two other ones. One is F everything and run, and the other is face everything and rise. So these are ways that we can look at fear with an awareness that it isn't what we think it is. In How to Speak the Science of Mind, this is the refresher course from February. Dr. Dennis Merritt Jones tells us, what is fear and how can we deal with it? He says, metaphysical fear is an emotional experience. Emotional experience generated by a sense of separation from source or God. All fear is attached to a concern of loss at some level. Every bit of it, this is me talking now, every bit of fear is a fear of loss. Dr. D says, a full realization of God's presence as the source and supply of whatever is needed to sustain us will neutralize fear. The antithesis of fear is love. Fear is the lack of awareness of God's presence, whereas love is the highest vibration of God's presence. Now I'm going to fine tune that for you a little bit, and I'm going to say that fear is the lack of awareness of God's presence at this moment. But still, love is the highest vibration of God's presence. So we know that all fear is fear of loss of one kind or another. Also in How to Speak the Science of Mind, Dr. Dennis Mears Jones says, what constitutes faith in the teachings of science of mind? In other words, what do we think faith is? What do we teach that faith is? He says, in this light, we can say that faith is the cornerstone upon which we build a conscious relationship with God. With enough faith in God and life, we can enter each day knowing it is done unto us as we believe. As we believe. Jesus told us that. Pop psychologists tell us that. Freud didn't tell us that. But it is demonstrable from time before time was recorded that what you believe is what you experience. And now that we know there's a power for good in the universe greater than we are and we can use it, then we have this great advantage. Yes, the law of cause and effect has been ongoing forever, but now that we understand what it is, we can change our thinking. We can change our internal cause. Dr. D told us that fear is an emotion, but love is also an emotion. Dr. D writes, love is the highest vibration in the universe. Nothing can withstand its embrace. The opposite of love is fear. To know God's presence is to experience unconditional love. To see the presence of God in others is to love them. Unconditional love is always the answer. Now, both love and fear are emotions. But did you know they cannot be present at the same time? They absolutely cannot be present at the same time. So if you start to feel anxious or a little bit of fear, try shifting to gratitude, because gratitude will lead you to love. When I'm in full-blown panic, I don't always remember, woo, skip that. Let's just go straight to love. Because my body, in response to an emotion, has already kicked in with the physiological reactions that are part of emotions. So I need to breathe. In fact, one of the things that I have done for years is when I start to get a little anxious, I will just stop and stand. And I'll take a deep breath in and raise my hands about here to waist level, and then just push down and blow out. That little exercise helps me. It keeps me from tightening up and tightening up and allowing these physiological changes to affect my brain to the point where I'm on the emotional side and not the logical side. I want to be using both sides. I don't want fear to override my ability to think clearly. Because that's what fear does. It gets us into a panic mode. And it is not fun. It is not fun. There's a story, since this is Mother's Day, there's a story in the Bible that I want to use as an example of love overcoming fear. It was in the time of Solomon, and there were two women who both claimed that a specific baby was their child. One of the things that Solomon does is he says, okay, you say it's yours, you say it's yours, bring me the baby. And they bring the baby, and both women are saying, no, it's my baby, it's my baby. And he goes, okay, we'll solve this. We'll cut the baby in half and give you each half. And the first thought of that is like, oh my God, really? What a horrible idea. How can you have half a baby? But what happened is one woman said, no, don't cut that child in half. She can have the child. The other woman can have my child because I don't want my child cut in half. And Solomon, this is one of the stories that relates to how wise he is, says, aha, see? Only the woman who was not the real mother of the child would have stood there and said nothing. The real mother of the child went into full love and protection mode. No, no. For my child to live, I will allow it to go with someone else. And so Solomon recognized she was the real mother and gave her her child. So this went from the natural mother being afraid of the loss of her child to another woman, being fearful, to shifting to a greater fear, the loss of life of her child. And her love kicked in. The love moved in and overruled, overtook, dissipated that fear. Got rid of the fear. And she said, nope, no. I love that child. I want that child to live more than I fear it going with another person. So love dissipated the fear. Now, what does motherhood mean? First, it means sharing in the creative power of God. Conceiving, carrying, and giving birth to a human is as close as any person can come to the act of creation. That's the beginning of motherhood. The beginning. But it's far from the end. Just think about your own mother. Is the only thing she did is give birth to you? No. Motherhood is also nurturing, sacrificing, loving, and ultimately letting go. Now, if your birth mother didn't provide those things for you, didn't nurture, sacrifice, or love you, then if you're like most people, there was a woman in your life who was a mother-like influence on you. Could have been an aunt, could have been a step-parent or a foster parent, could have been a teacher, could have been an older sister, but somebody was helping to take care of you. That story about the two women before Solomon, each one claiming to be the baby's mother, it's a very extreme example of how sometimes loving can mean letting go. As the real mother found out, sometimes being willing to let go is the only way to hold on to something. In these ways, too, mothers reflect the nature, the actions, and the being of God. We are grateful to our mothers, and we are grateful to God for giving us mothers and for being the source and the font of motherhood. But think about this. The mother, at some point, allows her child to go on and to do that which is the child's to do. With the divine, we have free will. We have the opportunity to do what we think is ours to do. And because we have free will, the divine doesn't say, you're in kindergarten of your life. You're in the kindergarten of your life. Do not go out partying all night. That's not what God does. We have free will. We choose what it is we want to do. Or we are guided and led by others who are responsible for us into what we are supposed to do. And with everything that we do, there are consequences. Sometimes they're good. Sometimes they're bad. Sometimes it's okay. If you wash your face and put on your socks and shoes, we'll go get an ice cream. And it's yay! But if you don't wash your face and put on your socks and shoes, you don't get the ice cream. So let's talk a little bit about fear. Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science and the author of the Science of Mind textbook, had something to say about that. In Living the Science of Mind, on page 376, Ernest Holmes writes, "Fear is the great enemy of man. It is impossible for a person to do his best if he is filled with anxiety." We are speaking about morbid fear, the type of fear that devitalizes us mentally, emotionally, and physically. He goes on to say, "They tell us that an infant only has two fears, the fear of loud noises and of falling, that all other fears must be acquired. It was never intended that we should go through life filled with fear, doubt, and uncertainty." He says, "Perhaps this is why Jesus laid such great stress on our need for faith, and why he told his followers that they should not be afraid of what was going to happen tomorrow, but rather that they should live today in a sense of confidence and peace and joyful expectancy. When tomorrow comes, it will take care of itself. Today is the only day in which we can live. For when tomorrow comes, it will be another day, and so on through eternity." Ernest describes that the people who actually live in the dread of tomorrow are living with morbid thoughts of what happened before. They're looking at anything that was an unpleasant previous experience and an unhappy event, and they fear that that will be their experience later on today or tomorrow. So they're living in fear. He says the present day in which they live is robbed of all peace and becomes a torture chamber sandwiched between yesterday and tomorrow. And it so disturbs the mind that restful sleep is impossible. So what we need to remember is that yesterday is forever past. We cannot relive it. Too often in our imagination, we relive it over and over again, bringing yesterday's misery into today. But we have to learn to forget yesterday. Now, I'm not saying forget all your pleasant memories. I'm saying forget what you saw as trauma yesterday. Because everything in your life has already been done up until now. And now is the present moment. Now is where we look at, how can I experience joy today? And if we feel like we've made mistakes, oh well, you can't undo your mistakes. They cannot be undone. So all we need to do is recognize, I could have made a better decision there. And then remind ourselves we made the best decision we were capable of making under the given circumstances. That was the best decision I could make. Now, I'm wiser. I'm wiser than I was 5 minutes ago. I'm way wiser than I was 5 years ago. I'm wiser. I'm here. I'm now. I'm guided. I'm guarded. I'm protected. I'm loved. I am part of the divine. And so I have another story for you. It's about two babies in the womb. And as you listen to it, I want you to see if you can identify any fear in it. And when I'm done, I'll go back and I'll tell you where the fears are, okay? This story, I'm sure, has an author because it's that good. But I don't know who the author is. Years and years ago, Reverend John saw it on Reverend Catherine Bonin's Facebook page and copied it. And so it's great. So I can only credit whoever Catherine Bonin got it from. Now, Catherine is one of my colleagues. She was one of my classmates at Holmes Institute. And I like her. She's a good, lovely woman. So it's no wonder that she had this amazing story available. In a mother's womb were two babies. One asked the other, "Do you believe in life after delivery?" The other replied, "Why, of course, there has to be something after delivery. Maybe we're here to prepare ourselves for what we will be later." "Nonsense," said the first. "There is no life after delivery. What kind of life would that be?" The second said, "I don't know, but there will be more light than here. Maybe we'll walk with our legs and eat from our mouths. Maybe we'll have other senses that we can't understand now." The first replied, "That is absurd. Walking is impossible, and eating with our mouths? Ridiculous. The umbilical cord supplies nutrition and everything we need. But the umbilical cord is so short. Life after delivery is to be logically excluded." The second insisted, "Well, I think there is something. And maybe it's different than it is here. Maybe we won't need this physical cord anymore." The first replied, "Nonsense. And moreover, if there is life, why has no one ever come back from there? Delivery is the end of life. And in the after delivery, there's nothing but darkness and silence and oblivion. It takes us nowhere." "Well, I don't know," said the second, "but certainly we will meet Mother and she will take care of us." The first replied, "Mother? You actually believe in Mother? That's laughable. If Mother exists, then where is she now?" The second said, "She is all around us. We're surrounded by her. We are of her. It is in her that we live. Without her, this world would not and could not exist. Said the first, well, I don't see her, so it's only logical that she doesn't exist. To which the second replied, sometimes when you're in silence and you focus and you really listen, you can perceive her presence and you can hear her loving voice calling down from above. Is there life after delivery? Well, yeah, here we are. And there's a reason why we never crawled back up into that womb. We grew. So what are some of the fears that are in this? When the first child says, there's no life after delivery, what kind of life would that be? He's expressing fear of the unknown. He's in an area where this is all he knows. And if he has to entertain thoughts of something outside of what he knows, it's fearful. It's scary. Gilda Radner said, motherhood is the biggest gamble in the world. It's the glorious life force. It's huge and scary. It's an act of infinite optimism. Well, the delivery process, maybe it's scary for infants, for fetuses, for babies in the womb. I don't know. I don't remember mine. So when the second baby says, well, you know, maybe we'll be able to walk and we'll be able to eat and do all these things after delivery, the first baby says, no, 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 these things are impossible. These things are impossible. Why? Why is the first baby going back to that? Denial. Fear of being wrong. If I've already said there is no life after delivery, I cannot entertain what options there may be after delivery, or I'm wrong because there can't be any options. I don't want to be wrong. I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't want to be made fun of. Now, those are kind of extrapolations for two babies in the womb, but it's the same concept of what we have out here. When the second baby says, maybe we won't need our physical cord anymore, and the first replies with, nonsense. Nobody's ever come back from there. Delivery is the end of life. And after delivery is just darkness and silence and oblivion. That fear is fear of loss of existence. Fear that what we have right here in the physical is all there is. It's not. The physical is not all there is. God is all there is. When they're talking about mother, and the first says, if mother exists, then where is she now? Quick trigger for all our fears of abandonment. Where did she go? Why isn't she here? Then when the first says, I don't see her being mother, so it's only logical that she doesn't exist. Not wanting to face the fear of abandonment, we revert to the fear of being wrong. But then when the second replies, sometimes when you're in silence and you focus and you really listen, you can perceive her presence and you can hear her loving voice calling down from above. That is the inner knowing. That is love overcoming fear. Love dissipating fear. Now, I don't think I have to go into a long explanation of how that relates to us. being right here within, in the power and the presence, everywhere we are, in, as the divine. We are divine creation. It doesn't mean this body is divinely created. It means everything. It means the air we breathe, the sustenance we intake, how we move about, walking without our little cords. All of these things, we are within divine creation, just as the babies were in the womb of creation. So Ernest Holmes also talks about a life worth living. Again, this is in the Living the Science of Mind. On page 408, he writes, "No person has the will to live unless he feels that life is worth living." And he can't have a deep sense of the will to live unless he feels he's going to live forever somewhere. That's why Jesus laid so much emphasis on eternal life, that there is always something worthwhile to look forward to. Ernest Holmes wrote, "It is impossible to get the most out of life while we are here unless we believe in immortality." Really, it truly is. There are people on this planet who think that this is all that it is. It's all physical. And when the body no longer functions, that's it. There is no animating force within the body that we know is the divine essence within our bodies. And so we know that this, just as we came for an experience on Earth, we will leave this experience. But we had to come from somewhere. And so that's where we will return. Ernest wrote, "We know that thoughts are things, and we know that our inward emotional reactions to our ways of thinking do produce inward psychic or mental diseases, which in turn give rise to most of our physical afflictions. And we know that the reason this happens is because our thoughts are based on the negative rather than the positive, on fear rather than faith, on disappointment rather than fulfillment, and on all the other negative attitudes we could name. What we think about comes about in our life. It's the spiritual universal law of cause and effect." You'll recognize the beginning of this quote because it was one of your morning quotes. This is on page 409. "It takes less energy to live constructively than it does to live destructively. It takes no energy to have faith, while fear devastates such energy as we have. It takes no energy to love. It is hate that is destructive. It does not take mental or physical energy to be happy, but unhappiness and morbidity consume so much energy that it devitalizes us mentally and physically. It does not take mental or physical energy to build up hope. It's despair that blocks us. All it takes is faith." We know that God never makes mistakes, and all prayers are answered. They are answered in the manner that corresponds to our principal thoughts, our primary thoughts. Not when we say, "Dear God, I want a new car." But our thoughts are, "Oh my God, this car is broken. You know, it's going to die. It's not going to get me to work." And so what happens? The car dies. It doesn't get us to work. Our one time saying, "Gee, I want a new car. You know, God, bless me with a new car." That's not the preponderance of our thoughts. The preponderance of our thoughts are fear. Where the preponderance of our thoughts should be is not in the emotion of fear, but in the conscious awareness that it is done unto us as we believe. And so we can be thankful for all the good that we have, because when whatever we are thankful for increases, and we can get that love and gratitude to overpower our emotional fears. Ernest writes, "This is the only way we could have been created as free people. For the freedom," let me start that sentence over. "This is the only way we could have been created as free people. For the very idea of freedom carries with it the obligations of ignorance and the rewards of understanding." We have to be free to learn, to grow, to study, to experience, and to learn from all of these things. To learn from all of these things. In the Science of Mind textbook, Ernest Holmes talks about the spirit of adoption, and that we can think of ourselves as the sons and daughters, the children of the divine. If we want to look at it as adoption, okay. If we want to look at it as birthright, okay. But whatever it is, the parental role of love and nurturing and guidance is the role of the divine as we are in this form. So we are all the children of the great Mother, Father, God. I'd like to close with a prayer from Paramahansa Yogananda. He wrote, "A mother's love is not given to us to spoil us with indulgence, but to soften our hearts, that we may in turn soften others with kindness." In India, we speak of God as Mother Divine. Every mother is a manifestation of God's unconditional love. Although human mothers can be imperfect, the Divine Mother is perfect. Mothers were created by God to show us that we are loved with or without cause. May all the sons and daughters of the world be filled with that motherly affection, which is the reflection of the Divine Mother's unconditional love. And may we give that unconditional motherly love to one another so that we have peace and heaven on earth. May Divine Mother fill us all with her unconditional love this Mother's Day and always. And so it is. I thank you for your time, your attention, your presence. Namaste.